I saw UFOs eventually. You know, it wasn't long before I went out there looking for them, sure enough.
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest is Preston Dennett, and Preston has been investigating UFOs forever. Well, maybe not quite that long, but a long time. Let's go back to 1986. You found your calling early. I'm really enjoying the YouTube videos you put together, and you've got 20-some books that you have done on this all across the board. I think 27 is the latest tally that you have. I did get the one on schoolyard UFOs because I was reading about the aerial stuff, and I knew a guy, John Foster, who in Nebraska had his own schoolyard encounters that he writes about. I wanted to focus on the most recent video that you uploaded, and this is the one that talks about UFOs and the Ouija board. So, Preston, background, what set this off for you?
Thanks, Wendy. You know, I wasn't interested in UFOs at all. I was actually repulsed by the subject growing up. Did not believe in it for a second. But I was a pretty young man, 1986, 21 years old. Heard a report on the news about a sighting over Alaska. It's actually a pretty famous sighting now in the UFO community. But they just kind of joked about this pilot who had seen a UFO over Alaska. I thought this pilot is crazy. I mean, he's got to be nuts. He's misperceiving. He's on drugs. He's lying. But I remember my brother Mark, had said he'd seen a UFO some years earlier. And stupid me, I go up and I ask him about it. And he's like, oh, man. Yeah, he described this incredible sighting. Literally, he and his two friends were driving along and came upon this UFO hovering at treetop level. You know, your classic disc. Colored lights, a dome on top, and they chased it in their car for several miles. I saw other cars chasing it. A lot of people were looking at this thing. And I ended up talking to his two friends because I'm like, Mark, are you serious? He's like, yeah, go ahead, call Phil, call Greg. Those were his friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's how it kind of started. I started asking other people in my family, my friends, my coworkers, and boy, it was bad news, as far as I was concerned, a lot of them attended seeing UFOs.
Like,
I was not happy. I really wasn't.
It kind of blew your perspective of they don't exist, huh?
Exactly. It kind of shattered my whole worldview. I had to reevaluate everything. It wasn't taught in schools. I mean, it wasn't on TV very much. This was not a very popular subject back then.
When you're saying reevaluate everything, that's what happens when somebody has an encounter. Most of the time, it's that thing of your reality just totally cracks. And so what happens when, you know, for you, did that mean you were going to dive in wholeheartedly? Because you also include paranormal, ghosts, you know, the whole nine yards, and in addition to UFOs. That's a wide, you know, basically a wide field.
Yeah, it shook me up, for sure. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to disprove these guys. They're seeing swamp gas. They must be. Even though I kind of knew they weren't.
Yeah.
These were people I loved and trusted, and I knew they weren't lying. It's pretty clear to me they weren't misperceiving. It's kind of out of options. So I went to the bookstores and started in the libraries and started checking out UFO books. Got a real shock. This subject has been taken seriously for decades. There was a government cover-up, which is not speculation, that's demonstrable. I mean, mm-hmm. We know this. And, wow, this appears to be a real phenomena. And I just could not let it go. It caused a huge radical shift in my worldview. And I ended up joining MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. They're the world's largest UFO study group. I became a field investigator. I started attending UFO conventions and meetings. And before long, I was out there in the field looking for UFOs myself and interviewing people. Yeah.
The word for that would be bona fide. You became bona fide.
I saw UFOs eventually. You know, it wasn't long before I went out there looking for them. And sure enough, it was just kind of weird lights at first, but started to have some really close encounters. And over the years, I've had a good, 10 sightings close up, which I know for sure are not planes or helicopters or, you know, balloons or satellites or anything like that.
Is there a difference when you have a sighting? You know, the barometric pressure shift, temperature change, do you feel something different about it or about you when you note a sighting?
Sometimes. I think it depends on how close it is and what's going on. I personally haven't felt temperature change or what I would call like physiological effects.
Mm-hmm.
I've interviewed a lot of people who have, but I do remember probably one of the most wild sightings I had, which I was driving home late at night after talking to my brother and sister-in-law about UFOs all late into the evening hours. And I was driving home through, Woodland Hills, Southern California. And suddenly, this was late July 1991, maybe 92, and this ball of light comes swooping down towards my car. My first thought was firecracker, because, you know, it's late July. But then I thought, no, it's a bird. But it clearly wasn't. It was a ball of light about the size of a golf ball, like an orb, I guess. But this darn thing swoops down from several hundred feet high, comes directly in front of my windshield. I'm going to say about a foot away, maybe two. It starts going back and forth, in front of my windshield. I couldn't believe it. This was not normal. And this thing darts away after a few minutes. But I don't know what the heck that was. I don't know. That was sort of my first real unexplained sighting.
How fast was the car going?
I stopped. I was going around a hairpin corner, so about 2 or 3 miles an hour, and I came to a complete stop when this thing, you know, came in front of my car.
Yeah, good idea.
So I was stopped.
Yeah, good idea. I was just curious, you know, if it was keeping up with you, but the fact that it was doing all of the acrobatics, that would, yeah, you're not going to miss that one. There are people who know telepathic contact, and what they'll say is they felt drawn to go somewhere, and then it showed up. Have you had anything like that?
Yeah, I've had that too. Okay. I was, you know, not long after that, I was in my condo in Canoga Park, and I was transcribing an interview from this lady, Wendy, who had seen Grays, been abducted. I mean, a really wild, extensive story. She had experiences that were very extensive. Thinking to myself, gosh, I wonder if she's telling me the truth. I wonder if this is a true story, because it was just hard to wrap my head around. She was talking about hybrid alien babies, being taken on board, examined, the whole deal. And I got this really strong impulse to run onto the roof of my condo, which you're not supposed to do. It's not allowed. And I've been up there, but I it's not something I do. I'm a good boy. I follow the rules.
Yeah.
But I could not help myself. And I went up there, and I'm thinking to myself, what the heck am I doing up here when this UFO appears, this giant orange glowing sphere? Actually, yeah, it was spherical shape, I guess, right across the street, sort of over the L.A. River. I'm going to say 100, maybe 200 feet away, at treetop level, about not even 100 feet up, 50. And this thing blasts me with a telepathic message. Honest to God, I have never had anything like that, ever. And it said, you don't believe? We're Wendy's ETs. Watch this. I am serious. Not in, like English or so many words, just a really strong impression. And I'm like, what? I fell back against the wall there. And this darn thing starts darting around, back and forth, like nobody's business. So it was a quick sighting, maybe 30 seconds, which is, no, actually a long time when you're seeing something like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, bowled me over. I ran downstairs and called her up. I'm like, oh, my God, Wendy, you're not going to believe what just happened. She said, I told you.
I like the way they said, we're Wendy's ETs. There's no doubt. We know who we are and who we belong to. She's our person. Get over it. Yeah. So a lot of this really depends on, I guess, right place, right time. And the more you are curious, the more likely you are to have some kind of an affirmation or validation. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. I think if you go out looking for this, you're putting out that, those vibes, those thoughts, because these guys are telepathic.
Yeah.
That definitely increases your chances, but I don't think it's really entirely random. A lot of the people I talk to, particularly those who have really extensive experiences, they have a history of it. It starts early in childhood. Usually, in most cases, their parents will have had sightings, their grandparents, their children. It's generational. It kind of picks on family lines and follows them throughout generations, really.
I want to talk to you about the most recent video, and this is Can We Contact UFOs with a Ouija Board? And that doesn't mean you're advocating. It means we're researching and finding out what has happened to have a better handle on the situation. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, my guest, Preston Dennett, UFOs and Ouija boards. And I love the fact that you have pretty much everything in here but the kitchen sink. You've got the guys who went AWOL from, I think, Germany or Spain, somewhere over to Gulf Breeze and had an encounter. They were guided to do that and got in trouble later, but he wrote a book about it. And there's another one that Bigfoot contact, ghost contact. There's everything in here, and it starts with a Ouija board.
Yeah, it's wild. You know, I heard about a few cases, so I decided to look more deeply into it and found a lot. I was really quite surprised. Ouija board is, of course, normally used to contact ghosts, spirits. But turns out there are a lot of people who've used it to contact UFOs. I think the first case that really, you know, was credible to me comes from a very respected researcher, Frank Salisbury. He's a biologist from the University of Utah, or Roosevelt, Utah, wrote a book about UFOs and had this case involving two children, Tammy and Tim McDonald, who were using a Ouija board, and it told them that a UFO was going to appear the next day over the Roosevelt Hospital. And they were super excited. You know, they lived right next door to it. And sure enough, this object shows up right on schedule. It's a very large object, orange, glowing orange balls, kind of, quite large, about the apparent size of one third of the full moon. And they're jumping up and down, they're screaming, they're looking at it. And what's really amazing about this case is there were a lot of other witnesses. People all over this town, Roosevelt, saw this. Numerous people. People were driving their car. One guy says it actually chased him down the road. So this was a good case. And that was the one that really got me, like, thinking, is this a thing?
Yeah.
Is this absolutely possible for people to do? I started digging deep into the files of, you know, various UFO research organizations, my own books. You know, I subscribe to the UFO News Clipping Service. So I've got a lot of files to look through.
Mm-hmm.
I found over 20 cases like this.
You've started doing your own drawings to represent on when you're doing the YouTube videos. I think that's great. It's great. It's like, okay, now we're getting the sketch and the scene kind of, and I've noticed your skills are improving.
Yeah, thanks. My sister-in-law is actually a fantastic artist. She does the covers for my books, and she's kind of rubbing off on me. I watch her do it, and I'm like, I think I could do that. I'm not nearly as good as her, but I'm having fun.
What was a surprise was the Bigfoot connection. The Bigfoot gave a warning to the person who was working with the Ouija board. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. This comes from Nick Redfern, another prominent, respected UFO researcher. And this took place in New York, 1985. Four teenage girls were having a slumber party. Laura is the main witness. It was at her house. They decided they're going to use a Ouija board, like, you know, kids do.
Yeah.
And they couldn't really get it to work, they thought, and eventually just put it away. And it was shortly after that the power mysteriously goes out in the house. And it comes back on, then it goes out again, comes back on, so that's freaking them out. And it was the next night, Laura's in her bedroom. Of course, the power goes out again, comes back on, and getting later, she goes to bed when there's this howling noise out in the woods behind her house. And it was not normal. It was not a dog. She called it a, quote, strange animalistic scream, which is, you know, something Bigfoot do. And that kind of freaked her out, but goes to bed, wakes up in the middle of the night, and smells what she calls, quote, the grossest smelling thing ever, like old rotting cabbage. And when I read that, my ears pricked up because I've done Bigfoot research. I've looked into all different aspects of the paranormal. Because it's all connected some way, and these cases show that. And I'm like, oh gosh, that's exactly how people describe how Bigfoot smells. So she wakes up, it's this terrible odor, and looks around her room and is really shocked to see what she called a big hairy thing, like a monkey man or a hairy man. And she says it was just like a Bigfoot. And she gets this telepathic message, and this also made me scratch my head, because having talked to a number of people who've seen Bigfoot, they do get telepathic messages sometimes. There's a telepathic link between the witness and the Bigfoot. I know how this must sound to skeptics. I kind of cringe a little bit because I used to be skeptic, but this is for real. Mm-hmm. And she got a message, and this Bigfoot told her to not mess around with the Ouija board and ghosts, which is kind of ironic because they did. You know,
from Sasquatch, Bigfoot saying, "Hey, you're in over your head, kid."
Yeah, so these cases are just beyond bizarre, but that's UFOs for you. They're just very high strangeness cases, some of them.
The Ouija board connection, where Sasquatch is saying, "You know what? This isn't really a good idea for you. You might want to rethink that."
Yep.
All right. Now, the other thing you talk about is automatic writing that also comes through where people are first contacting or connecting with the Ouija board. And I saw you also take some grief in the comments from people saying, oh, no, you know, this is you're going the wrong direction. I like the way you've handled that and said, you know, I'm sorry, but these stories are here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had some real pushback on this particular topic. And I get it. You know, Ouija boards, there's a lot of fear surrounding them, I think. And there's a number of people who feel like this UFO phenomena itself is demonic, which I don't agree with. Because of this, I did a lot of research into demons. I bought all the books. I've investigated some very nasty hauntings, some, you know, sparked by Ouija boards. I do think there are bad spirits out there. And I'm not going to recommend people use a Ouija board because it can be, you know, open the doorway to lower vibrational spirits, so to speak. But yeah, I'm not going to shy away from controversy. We're not going to solve any mysteries by ignoring the evidence. There's a lot of cherry picking and shoe fitting in this field. People are trying to prove their theories and they pick the evidence that does and ignore the evidence that doesn't. That's not what I'm about. I want to be very objective, very clear, very truthful about what's going on here. This is a complex subject, and there is a paranormal connection. Ghosts, Bigfoot, UFOs, aliens, all this stuff is connected. And that's what I like about this particular topic, because it just illustrates that perfectly.
You've done multiple videos, and I really enjoy the presentation and your work and the fact that you've got a lot of content to pull from, having been a MUFON investigator and then doing your own research. Like you said, at the beginning, you didn't believe in any of this, and all of a sudden, it's like the world turned upside down on your head.
Yeah.
Said, okay, wake up call, good luck. But that part of it made you, I think, a better researcher because you came from the vantage point of it isn't real to having to figure out, well, how is it real? I think you asked better questions because of that experience and your perspective to start out with. I'm also having a brother. You know, a close encounter with a relative who says, yeah, it might be real. What's the fallout from the Ouija board?
I interviewed his sisters who were using a Ouija board just for fun. They were trying to contact the spirit of Agnes Moorhead, Bewitched.
Yeah. And Dora, wow.
Yeah. And instead they contacted this guy who called himself Bart. He says, I'm Bart and I'm a demon. And that completely freaked them out, especially because they started hearing noises in the house. And they look up at the top of the stairs and there's this huge, dark apparition. They fled the house after that and were on their doorstep waiting for their parents to come home. Scared them bad. Mm-hmm. They had a number of activity after that where, you know, their names would be called and just weird, spooky stuff. And it slowly filtered off, but it took a while. Yeah, using a Ouija board without knowing what you're doing can cause a haunting. I have to tell you, I have done it. I went to a professional physical medium and we did table tipping. Pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a Ouija board, you use a table, rest your hands on it, and this table will knock or go up and down and give various messages, yes and no, generally speaking, based on the knocks, one knock or two. And it was incredible. I mean, we did all kinds of experiments, me and just the medium. I mean, she could lay one finger on this table and it would go right up. So I know personally that this is a real phenomenon. I don't recommend doing it unless you take the proper precautions. And then I think it can be absolutely done safely. The board itself is just a piece of wood. There's nothing evil intrinsic into it. It's the energy you bring to it.
Preston Dennett, check out his YouTube channel. Time for a quick break. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio.
Finding out UFOs were real actually made me more skeptical in a weird way. Now I have to question everything.
Preston Dennett, Wendy's Coffee House. He's been investigating UFOs and the paranormal since 1986, interviewing hundreds of witnesses on all sorts of topics, including UFOs and Ouija boards. Bigfoot also factors in. Imagine that. Something for everyone. Water. In this, you also have a UFO that appeared from under the water, and there's a long story that goes with that. Do you remember that one?
I do. Yeah, I've done a lot of research into, I guess what you call them, USOs, unidentified submersible objects, and actually wrote a book about it, because there's a lot of activity in our oceans, just saying. And I interviewed this lady named Marianne. She's a waitress from Carpinteria, and had a sighting where this object came out of the water. She was not the only witness. There was actually a police officer driving nearby. He saw it too. Their friend saw it from another location. That was 1978. Some 10 years later, she and her friends had another sighting. But in 1992, she's alone in her apartment watching Unsolved Mysteries about the wave of sightings up in upstate New York, Hudson Valley. That was a huge wave of sightings. And sensed this presence in her room, and it got very strong, and she started to actually see images of a gray-type ET. And she sort of reached out mentally to it and started doing automatic writing, which is, you know, basically writing with a pen on a paper, and you're not, at least the witnesses don't feel like it's coming from them. And she's right-handed. She was writing with her left hand, and that completely freaked her out. She called over her friends, you know, Susie, come over quick. Something's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a long kind of session, I guess you'd call it, with this gray tight ET. She described it as a typical gray, you know, short, no hair, large head, almond eyes, sort of the typical description you hear. And he said his name was Kevin, which she found very interesting.
Yeah, Kevin. Okay, that's like Paul. Movie.
Yeah, right? So I don't know. But yeah, he started giving her all these messages. Told her that they've been here on our planet for a very long time. Not hundreds of years, thousands, long before us, he said. And that they're very, very interested in us and our emotions and our society. They live in our oceans. Told her in very large numbers. Gave her all kinds of information. Said that they're a very benign race. They have no weapons or anything like that. They're not aggressive, not interested in taking over. They're just here to observe. It's his job, Kevin's job, to sort of contact people who were receptive and try to communicate with them. And told her, and this is a message that I get from a lot of contactees, that we are up for heading for some major environmental changes. You know, climate change, hurricanes, earthquakes, some real environmental problems due to the destruction, the way we're treating our planet.
Mm-hmm.
This is the number one message that the ETs give people. I've heard it over and over and over again. And here it is coming again from Marianne. Yeah, it's a pretty amazing case.
When she's talking about where they live, or Kevin is talking about where they live, I thought that was fascinating that he was claiming there are a lot, I mean, more than a few, a lot, a big colony or multiple colonies in the ocean. But we don't see them.
Yeah, well, I think that's why they're down there, because we don't really have the technology to go very deep in the ocean, certainly not in any large numbers, or, you know, from civilians. I think the Navy is well aware of what's going on. But, you know, even submarines can't go very deep or fast. These objects can come in and out of the water, and for that matter, can move through solid land. I've got a number of cases of that.
Mm-hmm.
They have some sort of force field that can push solid matter to the side. So if they want to hide, you know, underneath the surface or something like that, they can. And I do have cases particularly off the coast of Southern California here, involving not one or two objects, or not even, you know, 10 or 20, but 40, 50, you know, even more. I've got like three cases involving over 100 objects. So thinking there's got to be a base down there or a parking lot or, yeah, they're there in large numbers. So it's not just, you know, coming from one source. This is coming from a number of different sources.
In some cases, they've described being in a different dimension.
Yep, they do have the ability to travel into what we would call the other side or the astral dimensions. But we ourselves, you know, human beings are interdimensional. I think that's really an important factor to consider because people are often saying, well, maybe these aren't aliens at all. Maybe they're interdimensional. I'm like, well, you know, every entity, all of Earth is interdimensional. And this is, you know, not speculation either. Quantum physicists talk all about this. We know there are other dimensions. And most people throughout their lifetime will have, you know, an out-of-body experience, at least one, or some indication of these other dimensions. When we die, we do go to the other side. So there is an interdimensional aspect, I think, to all entities.
You have multiple books. I believe the 27 was the number, was the most recent number. Is this out, the wondrous 25 True UFO Encounters?
Yep. That makes it 28 now.
Okay. So, yeah, well, you know, keep them coming, all right? Because there's no lack of content out here. More people are experiencing it. More people are finding out that they just blocked it, and that was what it is, you know? So that's another thing, that there are people who may have had an encounter but didn't know how to reconcile it until you hear somebody else's story and say, oh, my gosh, that's exactly what happened to me. I think that's what you're running into, at least from the number of stories that are continuing to unfold with this.
That's my number one priority. You know, it's not about money or fame or any of this. I am in this to help people because it shocked me. I was not happy. You know, finding out UFOs were real actually made me more skeptical in a weird way. Now I have to question everything. Like, what else have I missed? You know, who else is lying to me? Oh, my God. So, that's really why I'm in this field, because I don't want anyone to have to go through what I did. It was really difficult.
Let's get into, did you have encounters with the Fortean element, which is going to be the cryptids, and it's going to be the fairies and Mothman, you know, all this other stuff. Have you, Skinwalker, have those stories been something that caught your attention as well?
Yeah. You know, I resisted Bigfoot for a long time because I was just afraid it might be real, and I didn't want to look into it. I'm like, I'm sure that's a can of worms. And it was. But, again, you have to be an objective researcher. You have to look at all the evidence. And I got this case from a radiologist in Canyon Country. He contacts me and says, oh, I had a UFO encounter. This object landed in my backyard. I'm like, you're kidding. He's like, no, you know, it had blue and white lights on it. It was right there. He lives in a pretty rural area. And his backyard sort of borders against the L.A. National Forest. And he's like, I don't know how you're going to take this, but you know, the night after this UFO landed, I had a Bigfoot encounter. Like, what? And I had heard, you know, I started to run into cases and, you know, reading where Bigfoot and UFO appear at the same time or within, you know, the same time frame.
Yes.
And here I'm getting my own case, and he described this Bigfoot, which was snarling and growling and screaming. His dogs were going crazy. He had telepathic contact with it. Said he linked up with it, and it was really mad at his dog. Following this, he saw footprints the next morning. You know, there was some evidence of this. But following this, he had a poltergeist outbreak in his home. I'm like, wow, really? He's like, yeah. Doors opening and closing, lights going on and off, cold spots, the whole deal. And I looked into his area and found out that there was a long history of Bigfoot sightings in that area. Not just him, a number of sightings. And that was my first sort of UFO Bigfoot paranormal case. I would soon run into others. You know, one lady's like, Bigfoot is harassing me. She lived in Acton, which is also bordering the National Forest on the other side, sort of the north side. And she's like, I think I know where it lives. And we went out there on this little dirt road into this, you know, kind of big wilderness area. How would I describe this? The terrain was very rough. It was impassable, very steep, just thick with brush. gone up there around dusk, and it was just getting dark, and we're pulling out our equipment. You know, we bought sound equipment, the cameras, and all this stuff.
We have to take a quick break. We're going to come back and finish the story and find out what happened with Bigfoot. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Preston Dennett, 27 books, including UFOs and Healing UFOs at the Drive-In, UFOs Over California, Human Levitation, all sorts of content, paranormal, 14. It's a motherload. Continuing with the cliffhanger, the encounter with Bigfoot.
I had just walked in front of the car, and she's opening the back door to pull out the equipment when this darn thing roars like nobody's business.
Oh.
I actually looked up thinking a plane had swooped overhead, a jet or something. And it roared again, and I was able to sort of triangulate the noise coming from this valley, this sort of ridge, where she said she thought it lived. And it roared for a good, I'm going to say 20 seconds, which is just phenomenal.
That's, yeah.
I was at the zoo once, and a lion roared right next to me. I could feel it just rumbling in my chest.
Yes. I was going to say, it's like a lion, only bigger.
Yeah, I mean, I could feel it. So, yeah, I had my own Bigfoot encounter. She's freaking out. She's like, get in the car!
I was going
to
say.
Because I was running.
That would be a quick exit. Like, okay.
I was running towards it. I wanted to see it.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm assuming you turned
just
around.
Me. Yeah. Yeah, she was pretty upset. She's like, get in the car now. We're leaving.
Yes, okay, yeah. Enough said. See you, bye. Yeah, that would be intruder alert from the Bigfoot point of view, letting everybody else know that there was a foreigner on site and we were going to take care of it, dispatch it immediately if it didn't listen to the warning sound. Yeah, like the lion.
Well, I ended up writing a book on Bigfoot, you know, more than one, actually, and the evidence supporting Bigfoot is absolutely mountainous. I'm going to call it conclusive, no doubt that it's real. I researched it in depth and all across the U.S., all across the world. California is one of the leading producers of, you know, Sasquatch reports. But, yeah, wherever there's a food source, a wilderness, they love high ridges. They love stream beds. They're omnivores. Yeah, we know quite a bit about them. They are for sure real.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and they're strong, and if they give you a warning, listen to it. But they're also benevolent. You know, my own experience was benevolent, and it was probably the circumstances, but that part of it was positive. And I didn't have a clue. I was going looking for crystals, and all. And then they announced that, oh, by the way, we have Sasquatch activity, and this is what happened the night before you got here. There's this big, huge log up in a tree. It's like a tree-sized log up in another tree. And they said, yeah, that was there overnight. Okay. Yeah. Welcome.
Wow.
Welcome.
Yeah, they do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of their way of signaling, this is my territory.
Yeah. For the years that you've been doing this, is there one absolutely standout experience that just blew you away that still is maybe the big one? Do you have any like that I guess is outstanding?
Yeah, that's a tough question. There are definitely some that really just like, wow. I mean, a recent one in my latest book, I was super excited to run into this lady and her teenage son. They were just going out of their minds because she takes her son to the dentist. She's from the Midwest, and sent me this x-ray that the dentist had taken, which shows this object under her son's back molar tooth. And it's a fairly large object. I mean, like a marble, maybe a little smaller than a marble, but definitely bigger than a BB. Freaked the dentist out, freaked them out. Well, freaked the whole office out, actually. Some of the dental assistants got very emotionally upset because this could not be there. There was no explanation for it. They're like, well, did you shoot, you know, did you get shot in the mouth with a BB gun? Even though they knew that wasn't the case because there was no entry wound, no evidence of any tissue damage. And the witnesses denied it, of course. They're like, no, we would have remembered that.
Yeah.
They took multiple x-rays of it, which I present in the book, actually. So this is solid evidence. I took these x-rays to an emergency doctor and another medical doctor, both immediately diagnosed it as a foreign body, a metallic, which they can tell from the x-rays, and they have no explanation for it. These guys, you know, the ones I took it to, were knowledgeable about UFOs. So, like, this looks like an implant.
Okay.
Finally,
Well, it reminds me of the movie.
I hear about implants quite a bit, yeah.
Patient 17 is the one I'm familiar with. I interviewed Steve from that. And, yeah, with Roger Lear doing all the research and saying, this is real, and people just look the other way. I think it's because, like you said about Bigfoot, you just didn't want to go there. That was a whole different can of worms, and it'd be nice if you just didn't know about that one. However, you fell into it.
Yep. I think that true researchers, you know, ones who are actually willing to examine the evidence, discover that this stuff is all connected to some degree. I started asking, you know, when I do interviews, I'd make my questions more open-ended. I'd be like, instead of saying, oh, have you seen a UFO? I would say, have you had any unexplained experiences? And what I found is that a lot of the people who are having contact have a wide range of paranormal experiences, out-of-body experiences, past life recall, ghosts, I mean, you name it. People are having all kinds of paranormal experiences.
I think you've got a job for life, all right? Your security, is guaranteed.
I'm having fun. I was looking back. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I've been doing this most of my life now.
I'm glad, because you have an extraordinary amount of content to pull from. So for people who are listening, I'm going to recommend your YouTube channel as well, Preston Dennett. You can find him on YouTube. Or your website, your book. I think at this point, with all of the categories you cover, there's something there for everyone. And the newest one available is Wondrous 25 True UFO Encounters. What all's in this one?
All kinds of cases, even government whistleblower accounts, onboard UFO encounters, healings, face-to-face encounters, USO encounter, a really weird one, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, one of the weirdest cases, if I could just slip this in, that I investigated was this lady who was, you know, a real estate broker and a counselor, a really good witness. As a young woman, she's driving through the Wachang Mountains in New Jersey on a motorcycle, an old style with a Kickstarter, and crashed. This is in a very remote mountain road in the middle of the night. She's freaking out because although she's okay, she can't start her motorcycle. The Kickstarter is all bent up. Turns out she's a contactee, and suddenly these beings, these figures appear. They look almost human, but have no hair, large dark eyes, pale skin, but otherwise could have passed for human, wearing jumpsuits, and they take her motorcycle, lift it up. One of them's kind of motioning her to step back, which she, of course, did. The other bends down and starts fixing her motorcycle with his hands and straightens the Kickstarter, sets the bike up, stands back, motions for her to get on it, and she does, starts it up just fine, and takes off. They fixed her motorcycle. They rescued her.
I want those guys.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I'm going to contact those guys. Oh, yeah, the We Got Your Back guys. Those are great. Okay, well, that's a good tease for this, the most recent book. And this is Wondrous 25 True UFO Encounters. Preston, I really appreciate you giving me the time. I enjoy your YouTube channel and your books, and I think there's a whole lot more to go with this, and you're right there where it's all happening on the front lines. So thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Got a lot of great shows in the archives. Wendy's Coffee House on Audio Boom, and you can also check the blogs, wendyscoffeehouse.com, or Talking to Nightlights. And thanks for listening. Stay curious.